Chapter 58. The sophomore team's first game was against East Orange. They had no game uniforms and were told the night before to take their pants and jerseys home and have their mothers clean them. Ron was in a quandary. His mother hated doing laundry. There was no laundry room in this building. He sat on the edge of the tub that he'd filled with hot water and detergent and bleached and soaked his filthy uniform. He took a scrub brush to the harder stains. When he was pretty sure he'd gotten everything acceptably clean, he hung them up to dry. George got home before Marjorie. When he saw the uniform dripping into the now filthy tub, he said, "What are you doing?" George had an idea. He got a plastic garbage bag and loaded the wet uniform in it. He could not fault Ron's desire to look clean. He would help him with that. Secretly, he told all his guys at work that his son was now playing football on the JV just as a freshman. His chest had swelled when they congratulated him and said maybe this would help keep Ron out of trouble. When Marjorie came home, George said, "Let's have dinner at my mother's house. She has a washer and a dryer. Ronald has a game tomorrow, and this fabric will never dry like this." Ron felt touched. For George, it was a win-win. He'd get to eat dinner with his family, and he'd done something for Ronald that he could use when he and Marjorie argued about Ron's lack of respect. Marjorie was glum, but agreed. She was hot and tired, and the last thing she wanted to do was have a noisy dinner at her mother-in-law's house, where the women didn't trust that she knew how to do anything in the kitchen. They ate escargot and beans. George was in heaven. It was accompanied by a tomato salad from the garden, and the tomatoes were plump and juicy and ripe and swimming in olive oil with some onion. Ron picked at his food and was grateful to George for helping him out. After dinner, and while the dryer was running, George snuck down to the Arrow Bar, where he placed a 20-to-win bet on Touchdown, a colt who was running in a qualifier down at Monmouth. The next day's classes went smoothly. Ron had been prepared both times that he was called on. He'd taken his Friday algebra quiz. He wasn't sure about that. He barely passed the first two, and they were review. In English, his black frock teacher had asked the class to explain the difference between an adverb and an adjective. Ron had been tentative, but correct and concise. He hadn't been hit, so it was a good day. But he'd watched others get slapped. In religion, Brother Cecil had rapped his knuckles down on the top of Anthony Malone's head for speaking without raising his hand. The sound had echoed, and Anthony held a hand on top of his head for several minutes afterwards. Brother Alvin had pinched his fingers into Malone's neck earlier in the day. He said that he was helping him with his accent. The class bonded. They were all going to take a beating once in a while, but that was the way that it was. Ron lined up on the receiving team for the kickoff. He was on the front line. Just before the whistle blew, he felt his gaze pulled up and saw his father standing alongside his car. His body froze and his mind went blank. The ball was kicked to his left, and his teammate covered it. Ron stood there in shock at the thought that his father was watching him play as a large black boy from East Orange slammed his body down on top of the New Jersey Catholic player who lay on the ground with the ball curled in his belly. Ron felt a surge run through him and felt like a river in his ears. He was on offense. The same kid was lined up across from him. Ron's assignment was to drive on him, and he fired off with low slanted speed and the need for collision. It came. His shoulder bucked into the kid like a kick. He heard the grunt, and the play ran for 11 yards. He looked for his dad. He was still there, standing and watching. When he heard the same play called in the huddle, he grinned. He was going to get to do it again. But he fired out, but this time the boy tried to circle him. Ron changed his trajectory and lunged and hit, and the kid went down on his back, helmet to helmet. Ron looked into his face. He saw fear. He liked what he saw. Jersey Catholic didn't score, but they drove, and when they punted, the ball was deep in East Orange territory. Ron was second string on defense. At least he thought he was. When he got to the sidelines, Coach Connors put his hand on his shoulder pads and slapped his ass. "Linebacker on the left," he said. He gave Ron a shove and sent him back out to play. Their perspective was different when you weren't down in a stance. Ron bent his knees and coiled his torso. The play went the other way, but he sprinted and got there just as it ended. Coach Peters turned to his assistant and smiled. "Ronnie likes to play football." The game continued, and Ron flew all over the field. He loved to tackle. He was unstoppable. His dad was watching. His team was up by one score. Then Alan Watkins fumbled in back of the line of scrimmage. There was a pile, and Ron was in it. The ball was wedged under him. A hand punched him in the stomach. A knee came up into his groin. Ron was clutching for the ball, but other hands were clutching for it too. They heard whistles, but no one was letting go or stopping. And then it was gone. He lost his tentative grip on it. Then he stood up. Fat black kid was smiling. He held out the ball. "Lose something?" he said with a smirk. Ron was about to go for him when he heard another whistle, and a ref was between them, and a yellow flag was fluttering in the air. "Unsportsmanlike conduct," said the ref. East Orange was backed up. Ron felt a fury rushing through him like the sound of a train whistle in his ears. He wanted to hit. He saw the play coming right at him. It was a sweep to his side. He moved towards it and felt a sharp pain in his back knock him off balance and send him sprawling onto his face. He jumped to his feet with fury in his eyes and a throbbing pain in the middle of his back. He saw another yellow flag. The East Orange player, who was called for clipping, said, "Oh, fuck these white refs and fuck this white boy Jesus school." The field erupted, and players were grabbing at each other. Whistles blew loudly. The coaches were instructed to get their players to the sidelines. They met with the refs in the middle of the field. They stood there talking. The coaches were gesticulating at each other. The whistle blew again, and the ref raised his hands in the air and waved. He picked up the ball, trotted over to the East Orange sideline, tossed them their ball. Then the two refs, still completely dressed, headed for their cars. Coach Peters' face was very red when he got back to the sideline. "Gather up our stuff, men. We're going home. Game's over." The players looked shocked. They didn't realize what was happening. "Fellas, I want you to stay together on the way back to the school." No one said anything until Alan asked, "Did we win?" "I'll tell you when we get back to the school," said Peters. Ron looked for his father's car, but it was gone. Coach Peters circled around the team with his car. His assistant walked back with the team. Everyone was eerily quiet. Back in the locker room, Connors explained that because they had a lead and that they hadn't instigated the trouble, they were declared the winners. Guys cheered and smiled. Connors said, "It's a lesson in self-control, boys. We had it. They didn't. Anyone bloodied up or have an injury report?" Two hands went into the air, almost ashamed. Each of the coaches went to one of the boys. Ron stripped out of his jersey and shoulder pads. He was stood in front of his locker, waiting. Alan walked over and said, "Come on, Tuck. You need a shower."